ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Grammy-nominated artist Kevin Lucas makes a special announcement. We hear from 16-year-old musical phenomena Sydney Alexander, and we go in search of the Severed Tower in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Banksy, the famed British graffiti artist.
Right.
You know, he's been in the news a lot. He's doing a tour right now of in U.S. cities doing graffiti on the streets and things. He donated a painting, I guess, that he got and upgraded. He's auctioning it off for HIV/AIDS patients. There's an online bidding war. He bought it from a charity shop, did his thing to it, returned it to the charity shop, and now it's being auctioned off. The bid started at $74,000. They're up over $220,000 last time I checked, and they expect it to reach $1 million by the time the auction closes. It's being auctioned off at biddingforgood.com. So it's a pretty great story, actually. I'm glad to see him, you know, helping out.
It's really creative.
He's in New York now, and he's doing a lot of, like, different stuff. So, you know, there's on his webpage, you can check out the new Banksy.
Yeah.
And they're so great. But actually, one of the gags that he did was on Central Park South, I think on the east side by the plaza. They always have a whole bunch of artists that, you know, they street artists, basically. Mm-hmm. And he had some guy selling original Banksys, but he didn't have his name on it. So, and they were selling for $60. He just like, and people, they only sold like three of them because they didn't know who it was. And it was kind of, they just had no idea because it didn't say this is a Banksy. These are original Banksys. So yeah, it was kind of like a trick played on New Yorkers. Like, here, you could have had this. This thing could have sold.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars you could have got for $60. Well, the piece that he did was it's a landscape piece. It has a snow-capped mountain, autumnal trees, and it shows a Nazi soldier sitting on a bench with his back to the picture.
Yeah. I saw that.
And he renamed the picture "The Banality of the Banality of Evil." And he put his signature under the original artist, Kay Sager, you know, and did, of course, his own little flourish. And I guess it had been sitting in the place for a while. Nobody knows where it originally came from, you know, where the piece was originally bought. But now it's a Banksy. So that's what people are going to talk about.
Right on. Yeah, I kind of did something like this when my book came out for the first time. I scribbled some stuff and kind of bent it around, made it look like it was old, and I gave it to the Goodwill in Ashland. but I don't know what happened to it, and I'm not a Banksy, so it's not going to go up for auction for $220,000. It's probably in a trash somewhere.
Yeah, I wonder for artists, like if you think about all the amazing famous artists through history, like if the famous name wasn't attached to it, it would be fun to play some gag and put it like, you know, in Goodwill and say, yeah, this one's kind of interesting, and see what people say. Maybe without the name, they would be like, oh, that's,
you know,
weird.
When Chrissy was saying about, you know, there's some pieces in Central Park, right, for $60, but he didn't have his name on it, right? So that's probably like a true measure of your art, because the first thing I thought about was Andy Warhol. I was like, you know, some of his work that he's done, now he's a good painter, but some of his work that he did, if you didn't know that that was painted by Andy Warhol, would you really pay $1 million
for
it?
The soup can. Mm-hmm. Who's going to pay $1 million for a painting of a soup can?
Well, not again. Warhol. I'm not going right, to yeah, do it again.
It's the name. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
Well, you know, there's just no...
Wait, in all fairness, it was a Campbell's soup.
Oh, a Campbell's soup. Well, that makes all the difference. You know, there's just no accounting for some people. You know, when it comes to art, people know what they like, just like in music. You know, I mean, I like certain people and I don't like others. Like
you love Cher. Kanye West.
I don't like Kanye West, yeah. But I love Cher.
Cher. What about Sonny?
I liked Sonny. I liked them together too. But you know, I heard recently that Cher kind of got in a little trouble. Did anyone hear about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a little touchy for Cher because, yeah, they liked each other in the beginning, but apparently Sonny Bono was a bit of a womanizer. So basically, Cher went on a Facebook Q&A with her fans on Halloween, actually. The fans asked her, if Sonny Bono were alive today and you only had a minute to talk to him, what would you say? And her response was, how hot is it where you just came from?
Oh, sting.
Ouch.
Ow.
Do you think
they
met
in 1962 and they, of course, they had their mega hit, I Got You, Babe. And then they had their Sonny and Cher, the TV shows. And, but they did have a rocky romance because he was a womanizer. He was, you know, she said one woman or even five wasn't enough for him.
They were quite big in the 60s. And they were so big, they were like, you know, when a group gets really big, they had their own movie. They had their own movie. They had a movie in the 60s called Chastity, which is Chaz Bono's name when he was a woman.
Right.
Right.
But the thing about it, that Sonny is, he wasn't, you know, a super good-looking guy, and he couldn't sing, you know, for beans, but he was funny. He was funny, and, you know, most
women, straight man, yeah.
Yeah, most women find that attractive. But the thing about Sonny is that, that gets lost in the mix is that he wrote all the songs. He was very, very talented musically, and he wrote a lot of big songs in the 60s for other acts, too. You know, so that's where
that's significant.
Yeah, and that's where he got all of his money, because I noticed here that Cher lost like all kinds of money when she got divorced from Sonny.
Yeah,
I know.
She was struggling pretty bad there for a while.
She had to pay him $2 million.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I don't understand. For royalties,
because when they were, as a married couple, they split everything 50-50.
But yeah. When
they're divorced, she had to pay him the royalties because he wrote the songs.
There's a lesson to get good prenups.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, right.
They didn't even have prenups back then.
Their show, their TV show, too, was wildly popular, and I believe he was a little bit more involved.
He was the producer on it.
He was the producer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, television, you know, that was a burgeoning medium at the time, and boy, has
Another thing, too, is Cher, and this is kind of, you know, like a little off topical, because Cher, really, I think she really did love Sonny, you know, because she was the one who spoke at the eulogy at his funeral.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, she said, you know, for everybody in their lives, there's always one person that makes a pivotal difference in your entire life, and for me, that was Sonny Bono.
Oh, wow.
You know, and, you know, she says, you know, very eloquently that, you know, without Sonny, you would never even know who I was.
Yeah. I think she's absolutely right.
Of course. Yeah. He gave her, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, she also said, like, I don't know if I should have ever been married to him. But frankly, I mean, all of these things make you who you are, you know, so all of these events, everything drives your life. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Everybody needs a chance. They need someone to believe in them and give them their start.
That's a good point, Jerry.
Just like Tina Fey and Robert Carlock are doing for Ellie Kemper.
That's right. Yeah. Ellie Kemper is officially returning to NBC.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So Tina Fey is writing a new show.
Right. Yeah. And the network has
amazing.
Yeah, they've ordered 13 episodes for next fall.
That's
series,
one more than 12.
Huh. Yeah, more than a dozen.
That's a baker's dozen, Charlie.
A baker's dozen.
So, and the series that they're going to be working on stars Kemper, who escapes from a doomsday cult and starts life over in New York, which is a lot like Survivor by Chuck Palahniuk. Well, the president of NBC Entertainment said, original voices like Tina and Robert don't come along very often, and we wanted them back on the air as soon as possible. And to have them working with Ellie Kemper, who we watched grow up on The Office from supporting player to leading actress, puts the whole package together. We feel fortunate to be in business with this entire creative team on something so funny, unique, and attention-getting. So this is going to be a huge series. I'm sure we'll all be looking forward to it and put it on our TiVo.
I'm really excited.
I'm really excited, too.
I love 30 Rock so much.
It was a really funny show. Yeah, Tina Fey is amazing. She's a great talent.
And I think absolutely everything they can do to get her back on the air as quickly as possible is good for all of us. Because, you know, oftentimes comebacks are a great thing. Like, I don't know if you heard, but Marshall Mathers is back. Eminem released his 8th studio album, the Marshall Mathers LP 2. It's a follow-up to, you know, his album, the Marshall Mathers LP, and it is busting all kinds of records. I brought a few here for you guys to check out. He's got 3 songs in the top 10 right now, Berserk, Rap God, and Monster. That's a pretty amazing feat.
I saw that video for Berserk, and it was just great.
Is it good? I haven't seen it yet.
It's a throwback to the early 90s with the Beastie Boys.
Nice.
And they have the big, giant boombox in the beginning, right? And the kids are like playing, you know, whatever, basketball or skateboarding or both. And Eminem walks out there and, you know, hits the boombox.
Nice.
And then starts up the music. And then he has 2 of the Beastie Boys come in there with him.
Oh, cool. That's so awesome. Yeah. I can't wait to see that. You know, this album is just amazing. It's 7th album to reach number 1, bumped Arcade Fire's Reflector out of the number 1 spot. Ironically, his last album to do did the exact same thing. Recovery knocked Arcade Fire out of the number 1 spot as well.
And they're going, damn, we can't catch a break with this dude.
What the heck, Eminem? He's the first artist to sell 40.
Right after ours comes out.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, you know, before they release their next album, they're going to go, okay, when's M releasing his next album?
Yeah, what is he doing?
we need a lot of lead time. He's the first artist since 2000 to sell more than 40 million albums.
Well, I think he just really has clever marketing because right now, like, he has 100 million fans across his social networks.
Yeah.
He has more than 77 million fans on Facebook alone, which is twice as many as Barack Obama.
Wow.
So he knows how to do that kind of marketing thing to really infiltrate.
And he really hits the circuit too. He was on SNL. And then he was on the Grand Journal in France, their big TV show.
Well, you know, it's curious, Maya, that you were talking about him being really good with Social Network because he grew up with that. When he got big, Social Network, when he first came out with Slim Shady, there was no Facebook. People were not on the internet. But so he grew into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you have to do all of that stuff when you're an artist now. You have to be your own, like, you know, well, I'm sure he has his own PR team. But
in the beginning, you know, he was his marketing machine. Yeah, absolutely.
Being a white rapper in a black dominated, you know, genre. That was a big thing right from the beginning.
He had Dr. Dre's backing.
But it's not on parallel when you think about it, though, because Elvis Presley was the same thing.
Yeah, right? A white singer singing black music.
Predominantly black music.
Or Macklemore.
sort of related, I was thinking about this, Arcade Fire, you know, is the band that he knocked off the number one spot twice. I don't know if you guys saw, but YouTube just recently did their first inaugural YouTube Music Awards,
and they
kicked it off with Arcade Fire doing a live music video of their song Afterlife. It was directed by Spike Jonze. The show was directed by Spike Jonze, and it was interesting. There was about 155,000 people that watched it streaming, and leading up to it, Jonze was talking about how, you know, it's YouTube, it's going to be unscripted, because, you know, YouTube's pretty made a lot of their bones by, you know, unscripted stuff, like, you know, babies laughing and pandas sneezing and whatnot.
Charlie bit my finger.
Charlie, exactly. David after Dennis, exactly. Charlie bit my finger. Unfortunately, though, it turns out that scripts for music shows are kind of a good thing. It was odd. It was very odd. So there was auto-tuning Tay Zonday's song Chocolate Rain. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Chocolate Rain. Yeah, so, and Andy Samberg and T-Pain's SNL I'm on a boat video.
I do remember that.
That was a good one. So it was weird. It was okay, but it was a little off.
I think they missed their calling. They thought that because it was going to be a live thing that they could do something. And I saw some of it, and I just like, I'm just clicking this off because it didn't hold my interest at all.
Huh. I think that's a fair assessment because it was the same thing with me. It was not what I expected.
Yeah, because like when you see live performances, you know, very rarely do you see them just live. You know, I mean, unless you go to a concert, you see it right there, and they don't usually film all that stuff. And then what they are filming, they edit it in. They edit it in, and they edit it out. But this was just totally, like you said, unscripted, and it's just like, you know, it's just
great concept. Great
concept.
It's not
just musicians either. Like, I feel like sometimes when the actors get together and they shoot the breeze or whatever, and you think, oh my God, this is why they have scripts, because these guys, they don't have anything interesting to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like really boring. We watch movies and TV shows that are scripted. We don't just get Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, and you know, Justin Bieber in a room and go, hey, why don't you guys talk for an hour and a half and we'll release it to the box office.
That would be interesting. You know,
kind of would, actually, but yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's scripts for a reason.
Ellen Kemper, Tina Fey. Oh, wait, no, that's a bad example, too. That'll be interesting. No, I remember watching an interview with Val Kilmer, and I loved Val Kilmer back in the day. I thought he was so funny and attractive. But
well, I'm your Huckleberry.
And then the interview, I mean, he was so dull. And I just thought, oh, God, like, just put give him something to say, because he could say it really
Somebody
well.
Put the bat suit on him or something. Come on.
Yeah, just.
You know, he's one of those guys that has had multiple acts. You know what I mean? He was an actor, like a very prominent actor. Then he kind of stepped back, and he was you know, getting very involved in politics and causes and things like that. You know, he's really starting to have a comeback too. I've heard that he had several, you know, roles coming up in the near future. And, you know, I was thinking about comebacks, and, you know, one of the guys that I am amazed by his comeback is Matthew McConaughey.
I tell you what, Matthew McConaughey.
I wrote him off.
I didn't even, you know, care less about him until recently.
Well, yeah, he used to be typecast as that kind of romantic lead.
Exactly. Which had nothing for me. It didn't do anything for me.
Yeah. Well, he really has changed things around. Dallas Buyers Club is one that was big this year. Another one that stands out is Mud.
Yes. I saw that movie. It was so...
Did you like it?
It's one of those movies, and I mean this in all sincerity, where you go and see it, and I'm like, whatever, I'm going to see this movie. It was the only thing playing down at the Varsity Theater, and it was a snowy day, so I was like, yeah, it wasn't even snowy, raining, whatever, something like that. And so I was like, okay, Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon's in it? Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to try it out. And I saw it, and I was just like, damn, that was a good movie.
Yeah, I watched the preview and it looked pretty captivating. Yeah. So two boys find a man named Mud hiding out on an island in the Mississippi, and they decide to help him escape with the love of his life as these bounty hunters descend on the small town. That's what I gathered it's about. And it's like 97% fresh rating from Rotten Tomatoes, top critics, which is pretty significant. Yeah. Actually, there was one reviewer who says, McConaughey commands attention with a variation on a certain kind of Southern character, handsome but battered, charming but also sinister, his self-confidence masking a history of bad luck and trouble.
You know, I look at Matthew McConaughey's career and I look at Ben Affleck's career and I see kind of that same parallel. McConaughey came on the scene, A Time to Kill, you know, was a real serious piece, and he got great reviews, and he started taking, you know, like he started getting into the Hollywood machine, and then he started doing all these rom-coms, you know, Failure to Launch, Ghost of Girlfriend's Past, you know, and people tired of it. They tired of it quickly. So he steps back. He takes it easy. He takes a couple indie roles. He was in Killer Joe a couple of years ago. Oh my God, that blew my mind. Yeah. You know, and that gave him some credibility. And now he's starting to come back with those serious, you know, roles again. And I'm bravo to him.
Mud was a fantastic movie, and you know, I highly recommend that you you like to watch on the internet. You can get it on I know it's not on Netflix, mm-hmm. but you can get it on Amazon, mm-hmm. and you can stream it. It's a great movie, and Reese Witherspoon has a good part in it, but it's a small part. Uh-huh. The real stars of that movie are Matthew McConaughey and the boys, the two kids that in that. It's just a really, really good movie. It'll suck you in right from the beginning, and you would just, you know, you would be amazed that 2 hours went by, because it would be like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that good of a story. And like I said, Reese Witherspoon has a small part in it. And she was recently here in Ashland, Oregon, filming her movie Wild. And she did not tell us to let to eat cake. So we're very pleased by hearing that. You know.
Let them eat cake.
Well, that's good for Matthew McConaughey, because he really was kind of struggling there for a while. And God knows, we don't need to see Ghost of Girlfriends Past. I did see it, and that was bad. So he's got his just desserts. And speaking of, there's a new book out called Modern Art Desserts, Recipes for Cakes, Cookies, Confections, and Frozen Treats Based on Iconic Works of Art. That is quite the subtitle.
Yum.
But oh, I know. So in 2000, a photography student went to the University of California, Santa Cruz, and she went on a class trip. And do you ever see these, like, these paintings? And they're so cool, of these cakes. It's just like loads of cakes. And she was like, wow, I'd love to bake. And what she started doing was making cakes based on artwork.
Okay, so she's making cakes based on famous artwork?
Yes. Basically, this is what she does. And it's such an interesting concept, where she takes, you know, the works of art, and then she creates her own work out of it, which I, you know, I kind of love that. I think it's really fun.
It sounds really inspiring. Like, when I hear about things like that, people thinking outside the box, it gets me excited to do that myself. I love it.
Yeah, I love that kind of thing.
I'm always amazed by it. You know, it's amazing. You know, we've talked about it before, like, what makes art? You know, and I love the idea of repurposing everyday items and creating art out of them.
Exactly. You know, like, I got so excited because I just bought a pair of shoes, and they are platform shoes, and the bottoms are clear plastic, and they are stuffed with Barbie heads.
Yeah.
And so, that's an example of what you're talking about, Jerry.
Right.
Where it's just so fun to take something and put everyday it into a different items medium.
And turn it into something different.
Because it really does become art.
It really does, absolutely. You know, it goes from being a shoebox full of Barbie heads and a pair of shoes to wearable modern art.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, talk about repurposing things. Google has repurposed a bunch of barges.
Heard about this. What's going on with those?
Well, it was a mystery for a long time out in San Francisco, and I guess in Portland. They had these barges in the harbor, and they were hoping that no one would even notice these big 40-foot barges.
Yeah, we're not going to notice.
Yeah, you know, especially the one in the Bay Area, because, you know, they just reopened the Bay Bridge, and, you know, it's got lights on it, so they're thinking everyone's going to be distracted. But, of course, that's why everybody has to notice it, because they don't want you to see it. So everybody's seeing these big white barges out there. You know, they're like, you know, they're a couple stories tall. I saw it on the news, video footage. And so everybody was wondering, what are these things?
Well, what was it?
I heard everything from, they were floating data centers, like, for their, like, servers and things like that, which I found ridiculous, because then what are they connected to?
Yeah, so everybody, you know, has been speculating. I mean, it was a mystery. Of course, Google didn't want any of this, but they also had some problems with their permit. And so KPIX TV, which is a CBS affiliate in the Bay Area, got in there, dug deep, and found out that these are actually floating retail outposts for the new Google Glass. And we've talked about this before.
Really?
Yeah. You know, so when they launch it worldwide, this is going to be an integral part of their marketing campaign. It seems like they're competing with Apple.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Bravo. Oh, that's
excellent. That was good.
That was great.
Well, Gwyneth Paltrow is interesting in terms of how the family does Christmas, because she recently shared that basically it's really low key on the actual Christmas day. She says, we spend all day in pajamas having bagels and coffee and sitting around, and then I cook and I change. And so what she explained is that in the morning, that's the only casual time, because really – she and her husband, Chris Martin, and Apple and Moses, they all dress up for a totally opposite experience of the dinners on Christmas Eve and Christmas with like really classy, they dress up and it's a classy soundtrack and they have like
They do like a sit down meal. Dinner.
Yeah, totally elegant dinner.
For Christmas Eve?
And for Christmas night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so both.
But the day is really low key and then they get dressed up and have like a big celebratory Christmas dinner.
Yeah, it's like major festivity in terms of the Christmas Eve. Then they wake up the next day, they're casual, nice. Laying back. And then Christmas night, they again have, well, she calls the Christmas Eve the rehearsal dinner for the Christmas night. And she says that she does something different every time. Like she said, I'll do an Italian Christmas Eve with 7 fishes and sometimes a custom from another country. She'll do something like that. And actually, they live in London right now, and she is moving back to L.A. to be closer to friends. So this Christmas is going to be the Brit Christmas.
Ah.
Right on.
So that'll be turkey then.
Mm.
No curry.
Yeah. Like, in my family, we have my mom's Hungarian, and we have all these, like, Hungarian cookie recipes, so we always make them every year. It's kind of like a tradition.
When I was a kid, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, you know, we were the only family on our street that celebrated Christmas. Everyone else was Jewish.
Hanukkah.
Everybody's Hanukkah, right. And when my brothers and I, we used to get like so jealous because they have Hanukkah, you know, 7 nights for the week. And and plus, those knuckleheads got out of school like every other day was a Jewish holiday.
So did you convert?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, you got out too.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't. We had to go to school.
You had to go to school on the holidays when the kids were gone?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just the way it went.
Weird. Huh. We got all those holidays.
Did you?
Like we got up for Rosh Hashanah. I got, you know, we got everything.
Yeah, I always wished when I was a kid that
I was deprived,
like,
man.
Like a Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, you know, so I could tell them I celebrated like Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and so I got all of them off. You know, it's like, oh, well, this was Rosh Hashanah. I got to get off. And then, oh, well, this one's, you know,
multicultural.
Only go to school like 12 days a year because the rest are all religious holidays.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Chrissy.
Well, talking about, you know, we're talking about Christmas and nostalgia, you know, thinking about how Christmas is where we're growing up, you know, nostalgia is, of course, all the rage these days. So I'm sure it will not come as any surprise to let you know that Bill Cosby is returning to primetime. That's right. Bill Cosby is coming back. He's made it. He told Yahoo TV that he is teaming up with one of the producers from The Cosby Show, Tom Werner, you know, who's been responsible for a number of.
Casey Werner.
Exactly. Casey Werner. Exactly. Yeah. So he's developed a new family comedy that he thinks will satisfy the people who have come to him in public places and said, can't you put something on that I can watch? So he insists the new series would not be a remake of The Cosby Show. Instead, it's going to feature older children and their relationships with their parents. So maybe kind of like The Cosby Show grown up type of thing. So he said, I want to be able to deliver a wonderful show to a network because there's a viewership out there that wants to see comedy and warmth and love and surprise and cleverness without going into the party attitude. He's also working on a reboot of Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, which
Fat Albert,
you know. So
you just came in the room. That was,
that was amazing. You just joined us. Yeah.
Wow, come on in.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. So listen up. Higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And, God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows.
That's right. I'm Jerry Renfro, and I'm in the know. And when we're done, you will be too. So Hollywood is a popular subject for us. We are an arts and entertainment podcast, after all. And I went and saw Ender's Game, the movie based on the book. I've been waiting 25 years for this book to be made into a movie, and I kind of wish I'd waited 25 years more. It had a $110 million budget. made $28 million opening weekend. The special effects were absolutely amazing. I was disappointed, though, as a huge fan of the book, I didn't think that it translated as well as it could have. And because of that, I don't think it's going to get a sequel, even though, you know, Orson Scott Card has provided well over 15 more books set in that same universe, as well as a number of short stories and fan fiction. And his books cover a wide range of different plot ideas, from would-be world conquerors to the discovery of a killer virus and alien races. Fertile material for multiple movies, but I just don't think it's going to happen. And Card, unfortunately, isn't the only author to see his popular book or graphic novel go on to become an okay or even crummy movie. Yeah, I know. So the first one is The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Anybody see that movie?
Unfortunately, I did.
Right, exactly. Unfortunately, I did as well. Alan Moore wrote the comic book that that's based on. And in the world of comic books, Alan Moore is royalty. I mean, he does amazing work. But sadly, the executives in charge of bringing the adventures of Alan Quartermain, the Invisible Man, and Dr. Jekyll to the big screen are not royalty. They are more like court jesters. The movie did very poorly. And finally, I lumped these last two together, Stardust and The Golden Compass. Any takers? Anybody seen either of them?
But you know what? I saw Stardust and I loved that movie. I saw it at the movie theater when it came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, this movie was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. It just did something real magical about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it several times on, you know, like HBO or Showtime, you know, it comes on.
Right.
And every time I've seen it, I'm like, you know what? This is a cool little movie. It's not an Academy Award winning movie. And
right.
It's nothing, you know, and neither was the book.
But, well, did you read the book?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's where it comes down to. It's like, I saw Stardust and I saw The Golden Compass, but I didn't read either of the books. And I thought the movies were okay. And that's the same response I'm getting from all my friends about Ender's Game. Anybody who hasn't read the book has really enjoyed the movie.
Well, you know, we talked about Papillon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You saw the movie and you thought it was a cool movie,
right?
And it is a good movie. You've seen the movie, right, Sarah?
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
You seen it?
No.
Okay. Well, if you had read the book, you would be like, this movie doesn't even come close to touching the book.
Right.
Because the book is so detailed, and it's a true story, too. But when they made the movie, it still was a very good film. It just wasn't everything it was in the book. You know, and it's really hard to take a book and write a screenplay, unless you're one of the same people. A good example of that is Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
Great movie, great book. Stephen King wrote the screenplay for it, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Card wrote the first two or three drafts for Ender's Game, but then they were basically taken and worked on by other people. So I don't know how much of it remained of his original writing. Huh. But I think you're right. I think it has a lot to do with the author being involved. And it can work. It can work in the right circumstances.
Right. And now you know.
And now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Kevin Lucas's current Grammy-nominated project features many special players. He talked about it with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today we have on Kevin Lucas from the Kevin Lucas Orchestra. He is a Grammy-nominated artist for Best Pop Instrumental Album this year, and the album is called Revelations. And how are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing really, really well. It's great to be talking with you. You know, I've heard your CD so many times. It's amazing.
Well, thank you.
So, you know, tell us a little bit about it for all of our listeners out there. You know, where you come up with your inspiration and what brought it all on?
Well, basically my life events inspire me, people I meet, you know, life occurrences. Everything I write has a deep meaning to it. I don't ever sit down and just say, oh, I think I'm going to write about this. Things that really touch me passionately, you know, are what inspire me. Then I sit down and I think and figure out what chords are going to best basically portray what I'm feeling. This particular album, there's so many different inspirations on it. Some of the album is about people, like track 12, Tim, A Man Who Could Fly, is about a friend of mine who was in a wheelchair. who recently passed away, and he inspired me. And the song Revelations, the title track, is actually about apocalyptic feelings I've been having regarding the end of the world, and since it's the last book of the Bible, it was kind of my inspiration.
Well, it's a great song, and let's hear a little bit of it right now. You know, that's a beautiful song, and you know, I gotta tell you, you know, you've got some quite a cast of people on this particular song. Walter Kellerman on the flute, boy, he's fantastic.
Yeah, Wouter is absolutely amazing. I'm just honored to have him. I met him about a year ago, and I asked him to play on my CD, and I didn't think he was going to say yeah, and he's like, he said, yeah, I'd love to. So it's been great. And Paul Spear, he's a Grammy-nominated guitar player from Memphis. His guitar tracks are just amazing. And then Aron T.O. Lee, he's from Washington, D.C., he's a bass player. So it's a great team on that album.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, I see here that you have Matthew Shells working with you.
Oh, yeah. Matthew is unbelievable. I met him during the 55th Grammys, during voting, and we started talking. We became friends, and, you know, we decided we wanted to collaborate last year. So, you know, we tried a couple songs, sent a couple songs back and forth. So finally, he sent me this Passion Grows song, and he's like, you know, he's like, I'm just feeling marimba on this song. And as soon as I got it, I started playing around with it, and it just sounded like the song was, you know, made for marimba.
It really does. You know, I mean, it sets the tone for the CD. That's the first track on the CD. And, you know, like I say, I've listened to this album so many times. It's so remarkable. And I love that song, Passion Grows. As a matter of fact, I like it so much. Let's hear a little bit out there for our listening audience so they can enjoy a little bit. So, you're up for the Grammy this year, and you've been before. What's it like attending the Grammys as a nominee?
It's very challenging. Using the word challenging is an understatement because, you know, this is my fourth year in the Grammys. In the first 3 years, you know, you make that first round ballot and you look at that ballot, it's just all famous names. They're not famous. They're very talented, amazing indie artists. So I just have the ultimate respect for the people I've been up against, and I feel honored, you know, to be there. Aside from all the major label artists, there are just a lot of indies who deserve a nomination. When you look on that ballot, you know, you see 105 names. All 105 people deserve to have a Grammy nomination, and that's who you're competing with. So I think it's very important to have a lot of respect for the, you know, for the people you're up against, because that's what's so amazing about it. If it was easy, anyone can do it. That's why it's so challenging to get a Grammy nomination, because you're just up against the best of the best around the world.
You know, that's certainly true. That's certainly true. And I see so many names that there are so many talented artists because, you know, we vote. So we get a lot of people talking about their Grammy nominations. And it's got to be a lot of fun, too. I mean, do you have like jitters before you go? And then when you get there, you're like, wow, this is a blast.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a high anxiety type of event. You know, naturally it's going to be. I mean, when you're just walking in the same, rubbing elbows with people like that, you know, and you're, especially if you're new to it. The first time I was actually chatting online, it hit me. Like last week I was chatting with the former bass player for One Republic, and I was just like, wow, I can't believe I'm even talking to this guy, you know. But, you know, for indie artists, it's pretty exhilarating and exciting, too. And you get to realize that all these people are just human beings like you. You know, even if they have a big name and they're huge, you know, they're a human being and they have feelings and they, you know, everyone's human no matter how big you are. And that's the beautiful thing about it. You get to know people on a personal level and it could actually talk with them and find out what they're like. And I look at it this way. Fame is fleeting anyways for most people. I mean, very few artists stay famous their whole life. I would say 95% of famous people, they're famous for a year and then it fades out. So that's not what defines them. They're a human being, and just getting to know them and talking to them as a person, you know, it's a pretty great thing.
You know, and let me ask you as an artist, because I read this as a quote from Clive Davis, the record producer, and he talked about John Lennon because he had this book come out, and he, that was one of the people that he wanted to work with that he didn't get to work with. He said he ran into him in New York, and he asked him who he was listening to, and he said, I'm not listening to anybody. And he said, why is that? He goes, you know, because he hadn't recorded anything in a while. And then he says to him, I'm going to ask you the same question, you know, as an artist, if you feel the same way, because he said to him, he said, Clive, when I'm getting to record something, you know, he goes, I don't listen to anybody. I record my own music. You know, he says, do you think Picasso went around and looked to see what everybody else was painting before he did a painting?
That's a good point. That's absolutely right. And personally, I spent a lot of years of my life just kind of secluded. Just the world, I mean, it sounds kind of weird, but the world just scares me and where it's going. So I spend a lot of time just by myself in deep thought. You know, and I play a weird instrument anyway. It's something you don't see every day. So you combine a unique style of writing with an instrument that's never heard, you know, and all of a sudden now when I'm in the public eye and I'm having to speak all the time, people are like, you know, where did you come up with this sound? There's no one like this. No one doing what you're doing. And, you know, of course I do have some influences, but I just spent so much time in my own world that kind of like a recluse and just writing what I felt. And I'm very thankful I had that period of my life because it kind of made the music what it is, and it's made me what I am.
So you just spent a lot of time getting into yourself and just getting into your own surroundings and coming up with music.
Yeah, I moved to the Shawnee Forest in southern Illinois. It's in the middle of nowhere. I bought some property out there, and I'm just bonding with nature and writing music. It's been a very rewarding process.
I was going to say, it sounds absolutely wonderful. How many people actually do it, though, you know?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Like, this year in the Grammys, I'm talking to all kinds of people, some people from New York City and some people from Los Angeles, and they're all telling me, yeah, I'm right in the middle of the city and this and that. And, you know, I met Scott Healy. He plays in the Conan Band, and he lives in New York City. And him and I had several really good conversations. He's just an amazing jazz artist. And just hearing his background, and all, you know, I have so much respect for him, and he told me how much respect he has for me. And it's just a beautiful thing because you got two people from completely different backgrounds. Here I am in the middle of the Shawnee Forest in the middle of nowhere with raccoons and deer around me. And he's in the middle of New York City and we're connecting musically. It's just great.
Well, you know, they say music is a universal language.
Yep.
So are you going to stay in your forest or are you going to go on tour?
Well, I'm going to make it. That's my home base, you know, and I'll just tour out of there. So I'm definitely planning on doing some touring soon. I've done touring in the past, but most of it was just Midwest touring. It wasn't national.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm mainly a solo act now. It's been an interesting year for me because my band broke up actually last January. We split. So the reason why I have all the artists on my album is because my band broke up. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't have Wouter Kellerman and Matthew Schell and Paul Spear. So, you know, at the time it was very difficult for me. But when I saw everything that resulted from it, I was very thankful that that happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those players are out of this world. They're just and really nice people, too.
Yeah. You know, Matthew Schell, I mean, he's just one of the best producers I've ever met in my life. And he's very young still. I think he's going to be a very influential producer in the future, I think, in the music industry.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. I've had several conversations with him, and he's just a fun dude. And then you see his music and the different people he works with and the way he can, you know, produce an album and make it just sound out of this world. He takes, you know, a gem and polishes it up and makes a diamond out of it.
Yeah, I mean, Matthew Schell mixed Passion Grows. He produced the song as well as coming up with it and writing it. When he sent me the first mix, I mean, there are so many levels on that song. It's so complex with all the panning. When I heard his levels, I was just like, I can't believe it. I never heard anything like it because you could hear every single detail crystal clear and then it sounded so big too. It was just, man, I was like, how did he do that?
You know, some of the producers are just like that. Like, for example, we were talking with a guy who was the manager for the Beach Boys, and he was giving us a few anecdotes about the Beach Boys when we were together. And he was telling us about it. He goes, yeah, he goes, you know, in the studio they used to call Brian Wilson Dog Ears. And I said, you know, why is that? He goes, because all the guys in the band said, like, they call him Dog Ears because they said he hears stuff that nobody else is hearing. He said they would play a track and they would all mix it and put it together and say, that's perfect. And he'd be like, oh, no, that's off. We need to add a tambourine in here.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, I didn't mention Van Stepanian, too. He's from Armenia. He plays piano on Passion Grows. Yeah, he just did a great job. You know, so the five guests on here, Vaughn, Ron Teo, Paul Spear, Matthew Schell, Wouter Kellerman, just, you know, they're just amazing. It's great to work with them. I'm just honored and blessed to have them.
So after you win your Grammy, where do you go from here, Kevin?
Well, you know, I'm not going to get ahead of myself. Just I respect my competition so much. And the way I kind of view it is you do your best, you give 150%, you know, to the music, and you go out and get the word about it around the world. But, you know, you can't control the result. And I'm okay whether I get nominated or whether I don't. You know, I'm okay with it. It's all about making music and sharing it and having a positive philosophy and forming musical relationships. And, you know, I think if you approach your entire life like that, most likely you're going to end up in the winner's circle in the Grammys at some point in your life. But that's not why anyone should do it. You know,
right.
It's all about the journey, and it's not about the end result. I would be thrilled to be nominated, you know, but it's not why I do this. You know, we'll see how it goes. As far as the future, I've got an artist that asked me to work with him this coming year. I don't know if you know Ricky Kedge.
I do know Ricky Kedge, as a matter of fact, from India.
Yeah, you know, I hope it's okay that I'm announcing this on the radio. We've talked about it. He asked me to work with him on a new album. He's actually going to write the album. And basically, he's got a new style he wants to try. So he's going to write my next album for me, and we're going to collaborate. I'm very excited about that because he's a very gifted songwriter and composer. I think he's a better composer than I am, you know, and he really likes my performance energy and my creativity with percussion. So I think it's going to be a great mix.
I think it's going to be great too. Ricky Cash, yeah, we love him. He's very good. He's been on the show before, and matter of fact, we talked to him in New York. We had our New York correspondent go out to his apartment in Manhattan.
So, yeah, yes, he's awesome.
Yeah, so we're very familiar with him. He's a fun, loving guy, too.
Yeah, he's really cool, down to earth, and just an all-around great person, aside from being a great artist. And, you know, those are the people I love to work with. So I think it's going to be awesome.
Well, you know what? I wish you all the success in the future, and good luck out there in the forest. Now, where can people find your CDs? Can they bring them up online?
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're on iTunes, CD Baby. You know, if you Google Kevin Lucas Orchestra, you can find them pretty easily. And my website is kevinlucasorchestra.com. And I'd also encourage everyone to check out my Apocalypse music video if you haven't heard that yet.
Oh, I have. I have. And I encourage everyone as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. So let's tell you what, Kevin, it's been so great speaking with you today. And will you come back on the show after the Grammys and let us know how it went?
That would be awesome. I'd be honored to.
Okay, great. Well, then we'll talk to you then. And thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you.
To learn more about Kevin Lucas, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com. Never fear, I know how to save myself. Call me up, I promise you, I'ma let the phone ring. I should've killed the butterflies. Those stupid things that kept me up all night. Got my coffee in my head, another makes sad girl feel better. Guess I'm in, guess I'm out. I never fear, I know how.
Sydney Alexander is a young, passionate future superstar in the making. Her infectious personality shines through in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview here on Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today, we are really privileged to have on Sydney Alexander, and she is a singer and also the one responsible for the song, which I just love, Why Don't You? It's just so infectious. Like, I gotta tell you, I was like, had that song on, actually singing it a little bit this morning. I was like, dang, this song's infectious.
Oh, really? Thank you. I had so much fun making that song. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Oh, no, it's great. Now, for all our listeners out there, tell us about, you know, how you came up with that song and, you know, where it's available and just every little thing about it.
Oh, all right. Well, Why Don't You is available on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. I came up with it one night. I was trying to think of something that would be really fun and bouncy, and me and Devin Spear, who's one of my co-producers, came up with Why Don't You, and we fell in love with it. And once we had showed it to everybody else and all our other peers, they enjoyed it as well. So we had a lot of fun making it, and I've been getting great comments, and I've found that other people really enjoy it as well.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I still continue to enjoy it. And for all of our listeners out there, let's hear a little bit of it right now.
Are you from Tennessee? 'Cause you're the only Tennessee. I'd give $1 million just to know your name.
I think everyone can agree that's just one infectious song.
Ah, thank you so much.
Now, you know, Cindy, you're very young, and you're already just making big waves.
Oh yeah, I'm 16. I will be 17 in March.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'll tell you what, with all the talent you have and all the music you've been putting out there, it won't be too long till, you know, there'll be a Sydney Alexander series, you know. Yeah, maybe we'll see you at the VMAs. How about that?
Oh, I hope so.
So what's your recording process like? I know that you work with Matthew Schell, and do you your whole band go in there, or do you guys do it in bits, or how do you do that?
Well, yes, you're right. I do work with Matthew Schell. He's my producer and engineer at Blue Room Studios. But I do things a little bit backwards. Instead of doing music and then putting a melody and lyrics to it, I write the melody or the lyrics first, and then I have my team put the music to it. So I'll come up with something and send it to them, and then we'll have session at the studio, and they'll come up with the music, and it all goes so fast. It's incredible. I'm working with an amazing team with such great talents, and it really adds so much body to my music.
Yeah, you know, your music speaks for itself, but, you know, I saw a little bit of some of your videos, and they're really well put together as well. It almost seems, you know, I got to tell you, when I watch the video and I see you guys in the studio performing and working together, you don't look, you look like a 16-year-old woman, but you just don't come across as you're the youngster in the room, you know, like you're on the same level with everybody else.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that video, that's definitely a great representation of what we do in the studio. We were just having fun and having a blast. That's really how it is. We love what we do, and we have a great time, and music is really our lives.
So do you write the majority of your songs, or how do you work that?
I do. I come up with all my songs. I'm my own songwriter. I usually write things depending on how I'm feeling. I'm usually feeling some really strong emotion, and a song will come out. For example, Why Don't You? I was in a really great mood. I was having a great week, and I thought, you know what? I should write a really fun song. And Devin and I had a music session where we were writing music together, and he played a little bit of Why Don't You before it had all gotten put together, and that's how it got created. And it was so fun, and it really showed how I was feeling at the time.
So why don't you have a girlfriend? I mean, like, you know, that chorus was just, it's so much fun, you know?
Thank you so much.
So where do you go from here? Are you going to do any touring? I know you're on the East Coast, but do you plan on doing any touring maybe later on in the summer?
I absolutely do. That's my dream right now. I've been so blessed to be able to do what I'm doing, but I think my biggest step forward will be to be able to tour and go around. My favorite thing to do is to perform in front of audiences. I love to be on stage and I love performing for people. As much as I love being in the studio and creating amazing music in there, I love my live shows to be just as good, if not way better, than what I produce on CD.
Yeah, do you have a preference yet, that which you prefer, or is it all still new and exciting?
It's all so exciting. It's just incredible. I've had so many blessings in the past few months. I definitely would say I probably prefer the live show, though, because I love to see people's initial reactions to my music. And I love seeing people sing my music that, and they already know it. That makes me so happy.
I bet, man. And, yeah, I saw you on TV. I mean, you're everywhere.
I have been. I've been so lucky.
And so what is the album, the titles of your album? Where can people get it? I know they can get it on iTunes. Is it available? Like, do you have a website or a Facebook page or anything like that?
I do. I'm all over the place. I have almost all forms of social media except for a Vine. But I have a Facebook account. I'm on Twitter. I have Instagram. I have a Pinterest. And you can find my songs on iTunes and Amazon right now. Why Don't You is the only one out. What's coming next? I have a lot of new music that's going to be coming out soon, hopefully. My album has not been released yet, nor have I finished it, but it's definitely in progress, and we're coming up with album art right now and a name for the album, so it's going to be really exciting.
So are you going to run a contest on your Facebook page and say, hey, or are you just going to come up with something on your own?
We'll probably come up with something on our own for the first one, but I think that's a brilliant idea for the future, to definitely have my fans decide what my album's going to be.
So what's it like, being in the music business at 16, I mean, to have everything fall in place. And most people at 16 are buying CDs and dreaming about this kind of lifestyle, and you're living it.
Right. Well, it's really incredible. I am still a high school student. I'm not even a senior yet, but I'm just so focused. I really know what I want, and music is truly my life, and that's what I do for fun now. I hang out with my friends, and I do music. That's what I tell everyone. So I just love to write it and put it together, and I love the whole process, not even just being on stage and performing, but being backstage and being in the studio, being able to write things and see how it's all put together. Engineering just fascinates me.
What was the biggest surprise you had when you went into the studio? Now, we work in the studio all the time, so I can make a few guesses, but usually when I see people come into the studio for the first time, there's always something that just, and it's not always the same thing, but there's always something where they go like, oh, so that's how you do it. Or, wow, I didn't know this is the way we did this. Or,
yeah, I was actually very pleasantly surprised. When I had first gone into the studio, I had no idea how it was going to go. But I just went in with an open mind and had a lot of fun. But I realized that it's almost like a big version of GarageBand. It's just, it's like being a little kid. I'm in there with a whole bunch of candy, and it's it's so fun. It's a dream.
Now, is it easy for you to do the vocals with everyone mixing at the same time, or how do you guys work that? Do you guys record separate tracks, or do you record in like one big studio room?
We usually put down a raw track first. So what I'll do is I'll send a very raw cut of my vocals over to my engineer and producer, Matthew Schell, and he'll put together a raw track for it. So then I'll put my better vocals on that track in the studio, and then we build the music more to that. And there's lots of pieces, and it's really in depth and fun, which I think makes my music so interesting.
Hey, your music is definitely fascinating, and I'm always curious about the recording process, because I know so many bands nowadays, you know, they do everything on different tracks, you know?
And, mm-hmm.
You know, you're too young for this, but there, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the band Van Halen.
I have.
Yeah. Well, they're a really big band, and their last album that they recorded together, they just, you know, they weren't getting along with, you know, none of them were getting along together. Especially the singer. And so their album.
Oh, I heard about that. I did.
Yeah, and it was a big, huge success, the album and everything. And they were asking David Lee Roth, you know, was it, you know, stressful being in the studio with all those guys and recording? And he goes, no, it wasn't stressful at all. Because he goes, we never were in the room together at any time. Because I just came in, did my vocals, and left.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's so unfortunate. I'm just so lucky to have such a great team. We have never had any sort of disputes. Like, we all are going towards the same goal. And I guess I'm open-minded, too. As an artist, I'm so open to new ideas and new things, because my new music that will be coming out soon, you'll see that not any two of my songs sound the same. There's a different vibe, a different little bit of spice in each of my songs. So I'm pretty open to new suggestions and trying all kinds of new things. It's really fresh.
You know, I love that on a record, and you don't see it too much anymore, because usually people are like, if they're a country artist, they are, you know, it's all country music, or it's all rock, or it's all jazz, or it's all pop. But when an artist mixes it up, it just makes it for a great experience, I think.
It does.
You know, I think we've all gotten a record at one time where we're like, I got it for this particular song, like, why don't you? But then I listen to the whole CD, and I'm like, man, I love everything on here, you know?
True. Yeah, I listen to Justin Timberlake and Bruno Mars as well, and you can definitely tell that their sound is the same, but there is a little different spice to each of their songs.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake is pretty much all over the map, but you know, Bruno Mars, I was surprised because he is such a versatile guy. I didn't even know he had that much range. I've just seen him on big shows like the Grammys and, you know, football games and stuff like that, but...
Yeah, he's incredible. He's got to be my greatest inspiration is Bruno Mars. Well, him and Justin Timberlake. Definitely. I hear their new songs on the radio. I get so excited.
Well, Cindy, let me ask you there now. You sing as well as they do. Do you dance as good as they do?
Oh, I can very functionally dance. I definitely think I'm going to stick to the singing for a while, but I'm good at putting on a show. My concerts are very entertaining.
Oh, nice. Because I know that's one thing that both of those artists do. You know, they both dance.
Absolutely, yeah. I really think I connected with Bruno Mars. I watched his music video for his new song, A Treasure, and I noticed that he had on a red blazer with, like, a cheetah or leopard print under it, and the funny thing is that's kind of his color for him is red, and my color has always been blue, and I have that very similar style of blazers and semi-formal casual wear, and I figured, I said, hey, one day if I could be touring with Bruno, we'd be wearing pretty similar colors.
Yeah, well, I know he's going to be doing the Super Bowl this year, so I guess, well, the whole world's going to see him, you know, maybe.
I'm so excited. Yeah, I've never actually watched the Super Bowl all the way through, but man, this year, if he's performing, absolutely.
Well, you'll only have to watch it to halftime, because that's when he'll perform.
Right.
Well, you know what? We would love to see you if you go on tour, you know, come out here to the Pacific Northwest. We have a lot of venues out here where people would love to come and see you perform and do your music. And
that would be amazing.
Yeah, you know, and in the meantime, we want to thank you so much for coming on to the show today.
Thank you so much. By the way, too, along with my social media, I do have a website. It's www.sydneyalexandermusic.com. But the different thing about me is that my name isn't spelled like Sydney, Australia, as you'd think. It's spelled with an I at the end instead of an E-Y.
All right, we've been talking with Sydney Alexander, and that's Sydney with an I, not a Y. And be sure to check her out on her website and her Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. She will be the featured musical artist on Just Imagine Inc. And thank you so much for coming on. And we look forward to you coming on again when your album gets released.
Thank you so much, Edward. What a blessing.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
To learn more about Sydney Alexander, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Severed Tower, the Conquered Earth series, a sci-fi tour de force set in an alien-invaded post-apocalyptic world, returns as the children forge deeper into dangerous lands in search of the Severed Tower. Holt, Myra, and Max have fled Midnight City with Zoe after watching her repel an entire assembly army. Zoe's powers are unlocked, but who and what she is remains a mystery. All she knows is that she must reach the Severed Tower, an infamous spot in the middle of the world's most dangerous landscape, the Strange Lands. A place where the laws of physics have completely broken down. But the closer they get to the tower, the more precarious things become.
She crouched on top of what was left of the old granary, staring at the strange contradictions of the landscape. Everything dark and light at the same time. The sky was full of thick storm clouds, but it would have been dark without them. This far in, what freebooters called the core, mid-afternoon looked like night, and the only illumination was a sickly shade of yellow that came from the strangely wavering prismatic sky. Lightning flashed from the clouds. Bright streaks of red, blue, or green, and whenever it struck, there was a flash of color. Shards of glowing crystals erupted from the ground and froze in place, and the earth was covered with their remnants, a maze of jagged, sharp walls that glowed in various colors. They filled the remains of what was once a small rural town below, consuming the streets and roads that once ran through its center. The old buildings had fallen in on themselves for the most part, or had been blown to bits by the lightning strikes, but she could see it had been a nice place once, quaint and quiet. It was neither of those things now. More lightning, red this time, illuminated a figure next to her. He was dressed in the same style of black and gray. Rugged-looking pants, light boots, tucked-in shirt, a vest with pockets, utility belts crisscrossing his torso. Around both their necks hung woven cloths that could be lifted up to cover nose and mouth. Also on their necks were identical pendants. Two strands of white metallic cord wrapping around each other, with bars in between them, making small spirals or a double helix. On their left hands, each finger wore a ring made of glowing crystal, exactly like the ones that filled the ground, and strapped to their backs were strange weapons. Long, double-tipped spears, almost as tall as the figures themselves, with a glowing crystal at either end. Only these had been polished and shaped into razor-sharp spear points and set into rounded brass casings that snapped into the shaft. Clearly, it was a double-pronged striking weapon, but looking closer revealed other aspects. The base was rounded into mirrored hand grips on each side, with separate gun triggers, as if the weapon could fire the crystal points from either orientation. It was a strange weapon, ornate and well-crafted, elegant even, but dangerous too.
The mechanisms of the artifacts created in the strange lands are clearer than in the series opener, and the science fantasy explanation of the tower itself is good fun, as is the setup for Book 3 in a much-changed world. Kirkus Reviews. J. Barton Mitchell is a screenwriter, comic book writer, and author. He studied creative writing at the University of Houston before going on to receive a BS in film studies from the University of Texas. After selling screenplays to Warner Brothers and 20th Century Fox, he created and wrote the comic book series Poe. He lives and writes in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Behind me now, Stay There, is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.